we were sending out updates and we'd give them certain facts about the market in general. We'd have typically three bullet points about the property. Here's what revenues and occupancy look like. Here's what expenses are looking like. And here's what the NOI is. That was something we did consistently.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
All right. So this is Dave Lindahl, and we just had an interview with Kevin Romney and Mike. Mike, what's your last name? Ballard, right?
Mike Ballard, yeah.
Yeah. And they told us about five or six properties that they own in the same neighborhood in Las Vegas, and also this 20-unit deal that they bought for 1.4, sold for 2 point something, and all their investors get a big return, 1.57 on a dollar, on the dollar they gave. And we've got some questions for those that were listening. So Jermaine, the voice.
All right. Great interview, guys. You guys did a wonderful job. First question today is from Bert. Bert says, can you guys describe some hacks you've used successfully to evict bad tenants quickly and safely? And what are some learning curves or lessons you can pass along?
I got a quick story. So to get rid of drug dealers, I have this letter. I haven't used it in a long time because I've been out of those neighborhoods for a while. But so if I bought a house and I knew there was drug dealers in there, or even thought, I would send over a letter to all the tenants. And I would say, dear tenants of so-and-so Warren Ave, I'm writing this letter to let you know that I'm complying with a request from the state police to use our property as a training ground for the drug sniffing dogs. So don't be alarmed when you see dogs in the hallways. <It's> like, that got rid of them really fast. It was awesome. That's a great that problem. How do you guys do it?
That's a great idea. I appreciate that. We may try that one ourselves. Mike mentioned that on occasion we hired roving security, and sometimes you put them right next to the door of the drug dealer, and that kind of curtails his business when he's got a security and a guard right outside of his door. So some of those types of things have been helpful. Getting out non-payers, and again, we don't ever want to force a tenant out and have them be homeless. We will always work with tenants. If they're willing to work with us and they're willing to go on a payment plan, we'll work things out. But when you have those evade you and never will talk to you and it becomes necessary to evict them, that process has become much harder through the pandemic and the backlogs that the courts have. So you just have to be very consistent and very timely with your process and stick to your process. And you know, eventually you can get those folks out of the property.
Depends on what city you're in as well, what state and city you're in, because some are easier than others. I mean, Texas still, if they haven't paid in 2 weeks, literally out. Massachusetts, where I'm from, takes forever to get people out. One of the strategies that we've used is we've tried to buy people out. We go to the door with cash in our hand and say, hey, you know, you're behind on your rent. Once they're 60 days late, they're gone. There's really no hope of them ever paying. Hopefully they skip out in the middle of the night, or you've got to evict them, or go to the door and say, hey, I've got $400 here. I want to give this to you if you're willing to leave the property by this weekend, and you get all the cash as soon as, you know, we walk through and it's broom swept clean. If it takes you longer, if it takes you another week, then it's going to be $200 less. And if it's another week, then we're already in the eviction course and I'm not going to give you any. The amount of money would always depend on what the rent was. It would be somewhat equal or enough to get them into another apartment, at least the first month's rent into another apartment. But sometimes that's the cheapest way to go, because if you get a unit that remains unpayable, the down unit, because somebody is in there not paying, if you go 3 or 4 months, that's 3 or 4 months of rent that's gone. And then you do the unit churn and then you have to rent it up. So yeah, we think that works.
That's a great idea. And we've used that as well, Dave. We've cashed for keys and we've had some success with that.
All right, Jermaine, next question.
All right. This one's from Shirley. She wants to know, is it a big risk to hold so many properties in one neighborhood?
No, I don't believe so at all. I believe it's, you understand the neighborhood. As we started buying the later properties, I could care less what the cap rate was because I knew the rents we were getting in the neighborhood for similar sized units. It becomes efficient to manage the properties. And there's tenants that move. We push our bad tenants out and they go to the manager that isn't as diligent or the newer owner, right? I think there's a lot of benefit. Again, we have properties in California, in Utah now, in Fort Worth, Texas, Des Moines, Iowa. We've partnered with actually several other RE Mentor students, participants. And so now we're in multiple states. We find it more efficient and better to own more in a neighborhood.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think when you own more in a neighborhood, number one, of course, you do your due diligence on the neighborhood and you understand what you're getting into. But neighborhoods themselves, and if they're going to change, you always buy in the path of progress if you can. You certainly don't buy if it's going the other way. But you just really understand the neighborhood you're going into. And yeah, you have control. That's what I like. I mean, when I was in that neighborhood where I owned three on the same street, I controlled the street pretty much. When there's this whole block of Brockton where within, I don't know, probably like a 6th Street block or so, I probably own 7 or 8 properties. But I knew that neighborhood like the back of my hand. I knew the tenants that I was going to get. My tenants would sometimes, when we sold buildings, tenants would say, you're selling the building. Can we move it to one of your other properties?
We see that as well, yeah.
Now, if you think about cities, you got to really understand the city when you're putting a lot of properties in one particular city. And I made a mistake, and I didn't realize it was a mistake until after. And I bought the most properties in any city was in Beaumont that we bought. It was 5 of them. We usually buy 3 or 4, go to another city. So I bought 5 of them in Beaumont. What I didn't realize was Beaumont floods. It floods 2 or 3 times a year. You got to move your tenants out, put them in a hotel, move them back in. I mean, that really hurt the cash flow aspect of it. And the other thing I didn't understand was this is 2 or 3 years after Katrina. And a lot of the Katrina victims went to Houston, but a lot of them also went to Beaumont. And I didn't understand that. There was actually flight from that because it was a different way of life from New Orleans to Houston. And it was just aggravated different neighborhoods. And so when we were losing tenants, we couldn't figure out why we were losing the tenants. Turns out that there was just another type of a tenant base coming in. It's almost like I'm not comparing Katrina victims to Section 8 housing, but I'm comparing what happened to when I would own a property that had Section 8. I always did well with Section 8 in Brockton, but I learned that you never introduce Section 8 to a property that never had Section 8. Because when you do, you lose all your other tenants. Next question, Jermaine.
All right. This one's from Corinne. He wants to know, how often do you send updates to your investors? And do you see any apprehension on the direction of the market?
I can answer that, Kevin, if that's okay. Yep. So every time at the end of every month is when we first started, just to develop the relationship. We were sending out updates every month. We'd give them certain facts about the market in general. Then we'd have typically 3 bullet points about the property. Here's what revenues and occupancy look like. Here's what expenses are looking like, and here's what the NOI is. That was something we did consistently. We've gone now to less frequently. Kevin, why don't you talk more about
it? We're currently on our value-add properties. We send out those investor updates every other month and give them a good report. We also give them about an 80-page report that includes financials, the P&L, the bank statements, the rent rolls. We are very, very transparent. We give our investors everything that they need to be able to see.
That's because they have a good accounting firm.
That's true. We use Ascent that Mike's a partner in.
For those that didn't listen to the previous podcast, Mike actually owns a company that specializes in accounting for apartment owners. So Mike, give us that website again.
So the website is multifamilyaccounting.com. And we're going to be at the ultimate partnering in September. To us, it's been unlimited. We've gotten lots of investors from that. Actually, if they don't go, they need to go because literally we've had investors. Every time we go, we get new investors in our deals. Ultimate partnering.
At UP 2020, we met a couple that invested in some of our properties and we kind of mentored them. And then they found their own property in Des Moines, Iowa, which we then invested with them. And they're now off doing more and more deals. It's been a great place to meet people and to network. So
it's just a community, you know, because everybody's open to help everybody get further their goals. Nobody's trying to hide or everybody's sharing information.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Next question, Jermaine.
All right. This one's from Beth. She says, it seems like your first raise was the toughest. How long did it take you to get your second property and how long was the raise for your second property?
So the first one, we probably took 60 days. The second one, we had probably about 40% of those investors in the first one came into the second one too. I don't know that I was too freaked out on the second one because it was about the same size, a little smaller. When we got to our 5th and 6th in the same neighborhood, again, they were taking 36 to 48 hours. Instead of sending it to our big list of investors, we'd just send it to the 20 or 30 folks that invested in the last deal.
Absolutely. The first is the hardest. And that's probably the most nerve-wracking part of the industry is finding your investors. But as they taught us at REI at the workshop, if you find a good deal, if it's a good deal and the numbers work, you'll find the cash. We found that to be true.
You're lucky because, well, you get a good investor base now, but that's not true in the sense that probably 75% of the time you'll find the cash, 25% the cash is just not there. So that's why people need to go out and be able to source their investors. And it's funny because, you know, I taught the boot camp, the Multifamily Millions boot camp for 12 years. I would always open with that because I would go through the deal process and people always ask me, should I source deals first or should I source money first? And I say, you do both. Because you don't know what's going to come first. If that deal comes, you don't have any money. I say, how many people have gotten a good deal? You hear the old adage that you got a good deal, the money will come. I said, how many people had a good deal and the money didn't come? And there was always, you know, 10, 15, 20 hands that would go up in the air, including mine, because it happened to me early on. So to answer the question, the first raise is always the hardest, and the first deal is always the hardest. Once you get over both of those humps, it's like you're rolling.
Yeah. One of the things, Dave, that we've done that Ultimate Partnering has helped us with is we have now with junior guys, we say, we'll come into your deal. You find a deal, we'll come in, we'll split the GP, and we'll supplement. We had somebody do that on one of our first big deals that was over 200 units.
Yeah.
And so we've done that with other folks where this group in Minnesota basically came to us and we had to supplement. They had the same experience we did. They're dialing for dollars and they came up way short. And then they called us up and we were able to come in and raise the rest of the money pretty fast.
That's the best part about the RE Mentor community is the fact that it is a community. We've been teaching since 2002, thousands of people in our community. And when somebody needs something, there is a resource out for that.
So today we have more than 125 different investors, all accredited investors, and we've raised over $36 million.
Sweet. All right, Jermaine, next question.
All right. This one is from, it's like Joseph. Joseph says, do you find it easier now to negotiate price for your properties and do the brokers now listen more?
Great question. We do find it easier. We know the process of negotiation and we've gotten more skilled at it. So we definitely find negotiating much easier. Also, we know these particular neighborhoods and properties that we're talking about, we know that neighborhood very, very well. Do the brokers listen to us? Brokers are pretty independent. They have their own mind. But yes, when we have an opinion, they absolutely pay attention and listen to us.
Jermaine, next question.
All right, last question. This one's from Linda. Linda wants to know, what specific criteria do you look for now when you're evaluating potential apartment investments?
The market is one, and we're very bullish on Las Vegas. There are lots of great things that are happening here with the development of the MGM Sphere, with Oakland A's potentially coming. So market is one thing that we look at. We always want to have a partner with feet on the ground. We've talked about these other properties that we have ownership in that are in Kentucky and Iowa and South Carolina. And in every instance, we've got a partner with feet on the ground that can know and understand and visit the site and look at it. So we're always looking at those particular items.
We've got one hack that I'd like you to think about. So because of my relationship with Ascent Multifamily Accounting, I know property managers all over the country. I went to several of them and said, hey, do you want to manage another property? And they said, oh, yeah, yeah, I really do. This was a newer property management company that was using our services, and she wanted to grow. And I said, okay, find it, and not through a broker. So she found one that was 258 units that has turned out to be our most profitable deal to date. We bought it for $15.5 million.
Where'd she find it?
She was trying to get the management contract on this, but the guy was using his own family basically to manage and run the property. Mm-hmm. And she knew he was a contractor. He was investing it. It was in really bad shape. He was making his own improvements, but his standard of improvements were here and we wanted to take it here. And so she made the introduction. We tried to buy it. He wasn't quite done doing what he wanted to do and keeping his family employed until he had the next deal. So basically about a year later, a little less than that, it became available. We stayed in touch and we were able to buy it a year later. And it's her biggest property to date,
awesome.
258 units.
I love these Q&A sessions because, you know, you get into the nitty gritty and you learn so much more.
Yeah.
A deal maker.
So, yeah, but property managers can be a good source, right? Yeah. Not just the brokers. Go to the young upstart property managers in your markets and say, hey, if you find any properties for sale or if you can help us find one, I'll have you manage it if you find it for me. And they love that.
They do. I can think of a couple of different property managers that became rich that way. When they change that business model, they start including that.
And some start getting equity in the deal, right? They're willing to put a little money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. All right. So for everyone listening, your next move is to take the information that you learned, go out, use it, do more profitable deals, do more deals, and make more money. Because that's what we're all on this train to creating wealth and trying to ride fast tours. All right. So thanks, guys. It was great.
Thank you.
Good show.
Our pleasure.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.